Welcome to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey newsrooms across the country. I'm Christy Strausser, Odyssey's managing editor of news. Let's kick things off with news about jobs. Is Gen Z about to make big moves? Here's Beth Fisher on WWJ in Detroit.
More business people are starting to think about looking for a new job, where for a while there, people were staying with their companies. Joining me to talk about it is Kaylee Abraham, a Metro Detroit branch director for Robert Half. And Kaylee, what have you been finding?
Yes. So 46% of U.S. professionals plan to look for a new job in the second half of 2026. This is up from 38% in the first half of 2026 and 27% 1 year ago. So what's driving this? The big stay mindset is starting to fade. So after an extended period of wait and see, more professionals are taking a step back to reassess where they are in their career and whether their current role still aligns with what they want next. More than simply chasing higher pay, workers are evaluating the full package, primarily in search of greater flexibility and career growth.
And what are some of the other reasons they're thinking about jumping ship?
Yeah, so expect a competitive talent market. More candidates are looking, but the top talent still has options. So retention is now a frontline priority. Employers that invest in the flexibility, career development, and benefits will be better positioned to hold on to talent in this market.
And is it any certain careers where people are going to be looking?
Yeah, so movement's being led by both early career talent and high demand skill areas. So Gen Z is driving the majority of the job search activity. Early career professionals tend to be more mobile and focused on growth, building experience, and finding roles that better match their expectations around flexibility and progression. As far as industries go, here in Metro Detroit, we've seen manufacturing picking up steam.
Is salary still a big driver of why somebody wants to move on?
So salary is still important. However, better benefits and perks, career advancement opportunities, and remote work options are taking the cake right now.
And how does AI play into all of this?
At Robert Half, we believe AI will ultimately be a good thing for the labor market. It's going to help automate tasks to free up professionals for more strategic work. However, employers are weary of candidates who are relying too heavily on AI in the job search process, especially to exaggerate their skills. So job seekers should be careful not to overstate experience using AI. Use AI as a tool to refine your resume or prepare for interviews, but make sure your experience, skills, and examples remain authentic and accurate. Yep.
And then what are employers looking for?
So employers are looking for individuals who have that drive and who are, you know, highly skilled individuals, and they're really looking for the soft skills over necessarily anything else. That's really driving what we're seeing as far as candidates who are selected for roles right now.
In terms of companies, what do they need to be doing to retain employees?
Yep. So they need to be focusing on the benefits and perks and overall flexibility. That has been a key and essential to employees right now that are looking for work.
All right. Anything you want to add?
I would just say the demand for skilled talent persists as hiring remains steady. So the labor market indicators continue to point to pent-up demand for skilled talent, with unemployment remaining low and job openings still above historical norms, which is exciting to see.
I've been talking with Kaylee Abraham. She is the Metro Detroit branch director for Robert Half.
So that's the good news about jobs. But how about your money and how safe it is from hackers? Let's check in with Tommy Tucker on WWL in New Orleans.
Jason Shield, Chief Operating Officer with Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Company.
Yeah, so today I thought we'd have a little bit of an interesting topic. The back door that hackers have in your living room. So look, this is one of those stories that everyone's going to hear and they're going to think it sounds like science fiction. It's actually very real. So basically, last week, the Wall Street Journal put a story out that caught my attention, and it's something I've known about for a while, but the Wall Street Journal really put it in perspective, which was Microsoft had contacted Comcast. Comcast is a big internet provider, very similar to, you know, Cox or Spectrum or any of those things, about some suspicious activity they had on a couple of IP addresses. And IP addresses are basically like your just like your address you have at your house, just for the internet, right? It's a series of numbers that points to you. And then what happened was when Comcast sealed this back with Microsoft, they uncovered a much bigger network involving consumer devices like streaming boxes and digital picture frames, ultimately resulting in over 750,000 home-based IP addresses. So,
wow.
I'll peel that back a little bit, right? So in essence, that meant that all of those homes had some type of malicious activity coming out of it, unbeknownst to the homeowners or the internet users, right? Or the you and me or whoever was using it. And so basically your home internet can actually become someone else's disguise. And what they do is they use something that's called a residential proxy, and it sounds really technical, but what it basically means is this: it's a middleman for internet traffic. So instead of a hacker connecting to whatever it is that they want to do, some malicious activity or something, but what they do is they route that traffic through someone else's device. And in this instance, that device was 750,000 unknowing home internet subscribers, right?
Hmm.
So, and this is becoming a much, much bigger thing, right? The FBI describes residential proxies as a way cyber criminals route traffic through home and small business internet networks so they can hide their true identity. That doesn't mean that the hacker lives in your house. It just means that they're hijacking your internet connection and using it for malicious things, right? So, and this breaks a really important assumption in a lot of things that we do, both banking and everything else, right? Because we assume if that request, that phone request, that internet request comes from that IP address that you said was good, then that's generally that sniff test, right? Like that's, so all of a sudden when that IP address that we used to use to say was absolutely valid, this is coming from Tommy, this is coming from Jason, starts to come in question. It doesn't mean the whole system breaks down, but it does definitely, break one of those layers that we typically mm-hmm. use. So how does this happen, right? I peeled this back a whole lot last week because it was interesting to me. It doesn't mean that every smart TV or streaming box that you hook into your house becomes this proxy for the hackers. What it is a lot of times is the risk is that a device or app that you don't really understand is actually acting as a box. So one of the big ones right now are there's these pirated streaming boxes, right? Which is basically they sell you this box for $50, $100, and they say, go get every streaming service known to man, right? And seems really appealing, right? Because Netflix keeps going up, Disney Plus, there's about 27 different streaming services mm-hmm. you have to subscribe to these days. So $50 sounds great. Well, you buy the box and you plug it in not thinking anything else. You get your free shows and you don't really care. But the back end of this is actually, it's hijacking your internet, right? So it goes back to the old thing, right, Tommy? Free is never free.
No.
And and so these boxes are becoming incredibly popular, especially as there's paywalls behind all of these NFL games, right? You have to be on 12 different services to see them all. And so this is something that people don't really think about, right? We always just choose that path of least resistance. It's also other things, right? Like someone that offers you a free VPN, right? Those virtual private networks to hide your thing, or those free movie apps. Applications are another huge way. And again, these apps seem perfectly fine. You download them, and then they sit on the back of your phone or in your system in your house. And then basically, they're backdoors to your whole internet connection. And so why would someone want to do that, Tommy? Well, it's relatively easy, right? If something's coming from your local network, it seems trustworthy, right? If someone was going to try to, hack something domestically, there's different layers of security you have for, say, an IP that comes from China mm-hmm. or Korea, as opposed to something that comes from the U.S. A domestic-based IP, especially a residential one, comes with a certain level of trust. And that's kind of what you're seeing, right? Is these types of attacks, they're actually taking these things and they're using them to do various things, right? Google recently broke up an entire network of these devices that they found out there that had over, during a 1 week period in January, it observed over 550 threat groups using this network from China, North Korea, Iran, and Russia.
Mm.
Look, this sounds fake, Tommy. It really does. I dug into this incredibly deep over the weekend. This is real. They were using basically everyone's home internet as their own private network to hide their malicious activities. And this is, in essence, someone stealing your car from your driveway and going to do a bunch of crimes, right? The first thing the police are going to do, obviously, is they're going to try to track that plate. They're going to go to you and me and say, hey, your car was used in a crime. And then we have to deal with the burden of actually proving that it wasn't us. It's the exact same thing. They're using our internet to do all these malicious things.
That's a next generation safety concern. But how about the next gen of war? Let's find out how the David that is Ukraine is fighting the Goliath known as Russia with drones. Here's Newell Normand on WWL.
Ian Kelly, former U.S. ambassador to the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe and to Georgia, and now on the faculty of Northwestern University. The Ukrainians are, they're like the ever-ready bunny, I guess. I mean, they just, they just keep on going. And it's amazing what they've been able to accomplish with this drone technology. And they seem to be leaders in drone technology in today's world.
Yes, they absolutely are. And what we're seeing is the result of several years trying to build up a capacity, you know, scale up capacity for producing these drones. And, so they're producing them in the thousands now. And that has made all the difference. Both those long-term or long-range drones, which are taking out much of Russia's oil and gas capacity, but also the defensive drones that they've been able to send up to help take down the drones from the Russian side.
But we have some of the same kind of conditions and similar conditions in this conflict as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's a real parallel because both Iran and Russia, their primary income stream has been for decades the sale of oil and gas, and because of sanctions, both have had that income stream limited. Although in the case of Russia for the Iran war, of course, we lifted their sanctions. I think we've allowed that lifting of the sanctions to lapse. So I'm hoping that income stream dries up again.
So when Ukraine deploys these tactical operations with drones going after Russian oil refineries, what are going to be the downstream implications of same?
Well, I think they're using them in a number of tactics. I think the most spectacular. I think most of us have seen those spectacular videos of spectacular explosions. But they've also been using the drones to really cut off their supply chain for their troops in Ukraine, which has had a real impact. They've also been able to sort of cut off Crimea, which is basically stop selling gas to consumers. People can't drive their cars in Crimea. So it's had a real impact, I think, on the battlefield. But I think the biggest impact is on the Russian people. So the Ukrainian people have had to put up with years of the consequences of this war, especially when it comes to power, taking out their electricity capacity, and so they've had to suffer through winters. Russians have not, but now with these attacks on the refineries, they're starting to feel it. Either gas isn't available, or it's very expensive, and I think that is having an impact on support for the war. Finally, they're starting to feel the impact of the war just at a time when the Russians have stalled their offensive.
Overseas, Ukraine is proving how technology can level the playing field, but at home, it's also leveling the field between cops and criminals. Here's more on that from KCBS in the Bay Area.
It was a nationwide first, a drone successfully used not just to capture or find, but to disarm a suspect. The Sacramento Sheriff's SWAT was called to the residence of a known felon. When the suspect didn't respond to negotiators, a drone was deployed and pilots found the suspect hiding in the corner of a garage. Wait till you hear what they did next. Joining us live on the KCBS Ring Central Newsline, Sergeant Edward Igo. Sergeant, it's great to have you with us today. All right, so we understand that a magnet was used to disarm the suspect. Tell us about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So they were able to locate him in the corner of the garage. He was obviously alive, but he wasn't responding to any of our negotiators. The fact that he had, you know, a knife in his hand, there's obviously a danger of sending deputies into that confined space with him. And fortunately, one of our scout team deputies, Deputy Lee, came up with an innovative solution. He was able to attach a powerful magnet dangling beneath the drone, and using that was able to remove the knife from the suspect's hand.
So, first question, and there are many, believe me, how big, how powerful was this magnet? Describe it to us.
So it was probably about 2 inches round, and it's just a rare earth magnet that's used to, typically we use it just to fix heavy items and such to some of our armored vehicles. And it was just an innovative idea. And at the time, it was believed that the suspect may have been under the influence of drugs. And so it was an opportunity we decided to try to take, and was wildly successful.
I know here in the newsroom, when you said 2 inches around, several of us are like putting our fingers together. That's a very powerful 2-inch magnet. Did it literally rip the knife out of the suspect's hand?
Yeah, it was able to remove it. The suspect later did reanimate, we'll say, after his drugs had worn off. And now at this point, at least we were able to deal with him without a knife in his hand. He was ultimately taken into custody by Sheriff's canine, Bo, who successfully apprehended him. And no deputies were injured. I mean, honestly, this just really highlights professionalism, the creativity, and adaptability by our personnel.
Oh, I got to tell you, this is better than a Dateline episode. I mean, what happened, and I mean, this is a hypothetical, but other people might be wondering, all right, let's say this suspect is wearing some sort of jewelry, some sort of neck pendant or something like that. Or, I mean, what if the guy has braces? I mean, would it literally have pulled him?
Oh, no. I mean, it's a rare earth magnet. They're pretty powerful, but the size of this isn't going to be able to lift anything. Well, probably much larger than the knife that it successfully grabbed.
I just find this fascinating. So what does the success of this operation mean for the future of your department and other emergency response agencies? I'm sure word of this magnet is circulating around police agencies all across the country. I mean, is this a viable new way to disarm a suspect, a drone with a magnet?
Well, it's quite possible. I mean, obviously, depending on the size of the item that you're trying to collect is going to dictate the size of the drone you're going to need, as well as the size of the magnet you're going to need. But in this instance, I mean, a first in the nation, obviously everything just aligned perfectly, as well as the pilot's amazing skill to be able to make this happen. You know, one of the things was right in the doorway was a ladder. And the first thought was, if you get close enough to that, the magnet's just going to grab onto the ladder. And now the drone lives there. So it was just skill, precision, and an amazing outcome.
Would it have worked with a gun? Do you think, could it have pulled a gun out of somebody's hand?
I don't think so. The fact that the knife was lightweight, the fact that the suspect was under the influence of drugs, and so he wasn't gripping it with all of his might at the time that they were able to grab it, it all just really, all the pieces fell into place to make this a successful outcome.
A drone with a magnet disarming a suspect. I love that. Sergeant Edward Igo in Sacramento, thank you so much for coming on. It's a great story. We appreciate you joining us.
Thank you for listening to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey. On Deadline is written and produced by me, Christy Strasser, and by Lauren Barry. Subscribe wherever you get podcasts.